Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sauchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sauchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sauchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolette and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Crazy days, crazy
Mike,
days.
You just barely got here.
I just flew in from Carroll Gardens.
My God, what happened?
I'm not sure if I'm here yet. Should I say that I'm here yet?
Yeah, no, we're going to introduce
Jack,
you.
Yeah,
you're not here yet.
I'm not here yet, so don't talk to me.
Jack will be here any moment now.
He's on his way.
Jack will be here.
Sorry, I'm running late.
Any moment. Do you happen to know all the words to Hard Rain's Gonna Fall by chance?
I know the term. Because
Patti Smith doesn't.
I don't think Bob Dylan does.
I'll tell you what. How do you go all the way to fucking Sweden to represent Bob Dylan, the Nobel Prize winner, and she's reading it. The words are fucking in front of her, and she fucks it up.
She went there in lieu of Bob?
This is what should have been the Donald Trump tweet of the week. Yeah. Patti Smith forgets words to the Bob Dylan song. Sad. It was embarrassing.
In front of the King of Sweden?
I didn't realize that already happened. I didn't realize that already went down.
It happened last
This sounds
night.
Like fake news. I don't think this
happened.
You could watch it on your interweb, and about two verses into it, she sort of mumbles it, forgets it, apologizes, stops the orchestra she's playing with it, and starts it again. And she has the words in front of her. And, you know, I work with a lot of musicians, as you all do, but sometimes I get to work with guys in my...
No, I'm in the flesh tones. I don't work with musicians.
Well... too many goddamn notes, right?
Too many notes.
Yeah, there's a lot of notes.
Listen, out there. Finish this story.
The story is, you know, you don't get to fuck it up, okay? That's the whole point. When you see things like the Grammy Awards, the Academy Awards, when you see people at the Kennedy Center Awards, and as my guys, as a book editor and working for Hal Leonard, I've talked to a lot of the session guys who work on these things, like a very high level, musical directors and whatnot. I just did a big job with Kenny Aronoff, who's the drummer in a lot of things. You do not to get fucked up, and people make last minute changes.
Yeah.
Okay, Patti Smith knew this was cut. No. No, I'm
She's
not
keeping
accepting.
It real, Mike.
I'm not accepting of this.
I think no,
in the world of fake news, the real reason is because he actually tried to get Burt Reynolds to come sing "You Gotta Serve Somebody," and he turned it down. And
hey,
so he had to.
Hey, this is good. Well, this is good. Anyway,
well,
I figured.
I felt that sad hippie poorly represented America.
I think so, too.
I'm very, very
quite frankly, I figure if the King of Sweden is going to give you a gold medal and $1 million, the least you can do is show up and accept
Or send
it.
Someone who can get through your fucking song.
You're not
supposed to fuck up with these.
We could have got someone from an open mic in Brooklyn that could have handled that job better.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Your point, right?
I was very, very, very disappointed. You know, the other funniest guy to ever win the Nobel Prize was Richard Feynman, the physicist, who said he didn't want to go to accept the award because apparently when you get the award, from the king, you have to walk backwards, like back down the steps, because you're not supposed to turn your back to the king. And he was afraid he'd trip, so therefore he kind of wanted to turn the award down for the Nobel Prize in physics.
Well, that seems like a good reason.
That's logical. His wife talked him out of it. He said, if you can build an atom bomb, surely you can handle this.
Well, Bob Dylan just took it as the ultimate excuse to continue his cryptic legacy. You know, that's why he turned it
apparently
down.
He has to do a lecture, though. That's part of the deal. There has to be a Nobel lecture. And I don't know, Jack Grace, our guest today, who I'll introduce in full.
Why don't you introduce? We have a guest here in the studio. Studio audience, yes. Yes.
Well, speaking of troubled troubadours.
Formerly of Beacon, New York.
Right, until my wife left me and kicked me out of Beacon.
Jack is a local legend. More than luminary, a genuine legend, and like I said, it's talking of troubled troubadours you are keeping alive. You play all the time, Jack. You keep it on the road, which I admire you to ends, which I can't even begin to
describe. Where you been? Where you been recently, Jack?
Where have I been? I was in Cazenovia, New York, and Delhi, New York.
Delhi, right.
Yeah, playing at the Shire.
Really? There's a scene up in Delhi?
No, there's not.
Okay, but there was a gig, okay.
But there was a scene, actually, in this place, Cazenovia, outside of Oneonta. It's a nice little theater that these people run, and they have one of those crowds where they trust the place, and people come. And,
well, that's great.
And I used the word fuck, and a couple walked out.
Oh, okay. Well, I see that. But that doesn't fly in Oneonta.
Well, they liked it. Like, the owner's like, yeah, they totally took off when you said, I was talking about the industry, the music industry. Said, you guys can all buy a CD if you like. I know, then you're going to tell me you don't even have a CD player. We're all fucked.
Oh, that they went. You were going blue. Yes.
I would like to say that I've been enjoying the new CD, the one you gave me last
time. Oh, thanks.
What's that
last
called?
Last time I saw you?
Everything I Say is a Lie.
Even that itself is a lie.
Ooh. It's true.
But I really dig it. I know you did it with Eric Gamble, who is such a good engineer. That record sounds so
recorded around good. Literally around the corner from my house.
That's true.
And that's unbelievable.
The record has such, not only is the sound very pristine, but the pace of that record is so measured and nice. It's really very groovy, and unlike you and I, Zaremba, it like resists the temptation to rock out unnecessarily, which is our tragic flaw.
I like to rock out unnecessarily. I bought an SG and got it yesterday.
I just saw the picture of an SG. Well, welcome to my world, my friend.
I'm excited.
For the people at home, he's referring to an SG Gibson electric guitar.
That is.
I believe SG actually stands for Spanish guitar.
It does.
Actually, once upon a time.
Is that why it had those little devil horns on?
Yeah, that's why. And, you know, it's... You know, you can. I like trying to sound like Tony Iommi on it as much as possible. That's my thing right now.
I'm more of an Angus guy, but I guess I went to see Black Sabbath when they came through the last time.
Yeah,
it was fucking amazing. It exceeded all expectations.
I had the same experience.
It was like I knew we were gonna have fun.
Yeah,
we were gonna smoke as much pot as I did between like 1978 and 1998.
No, but it's real. It's still real. It's not an oldies act.
No,
there's a ritual that goes down when they play that show.
No, it was incredible. No less than Dean Rispler said it was the single best guitar and bass tone he'd ever heard of a live performance in his life.
Yeah,
in Madison Square Garden.
That's what we're talking about.
I want to hit this though from your bio though before you get too far into this. Jack's live show is what truly tells his story. It's a combination of rock, vaudevillian improvisation, country with a Latin twist, and you cover a lot of genres. You know, last time we were talking, you said that's the biggest problem is you. I know you sort of as a country guy as a roots.
At one point I just put that stamp on it, and actually then that was when my career took off the most, was when I just said I'm country. But eventually it wore off. I started to do all the same weird shit I like to do.
And you'd sort of like, you know, the problem is people want to pigeonhole you if they can't call you country.
Yeah.
Or you're doing something else.
You know. Well, it's just easier when you're pigeonholed to get certain types of work. For instance, you know, when you're just country, like, oh, we're having this dance, and let's get that country band. But when they don't know what you are, they don't think of you to use you for certain types of work.
That's right. Art's very nice, but someone's got to pay for it.
You know, it's like being an actor when you're typecast as the bad guy. Like, oh, let's get that bad guy for the bad guy part.
So remember, in this relationship of this thing of ours, this Cosa Nostra, who's the heel? Who's the baby face?
Who's the heel?
Yeah, what's going on with you two?
I was hoping I could be the heel.
That sounds interesting.
I usually work as the heel. I've never worked baby before.
I'd like to be the heavy.
Like, I'll tell you what.
The straight man? More or less.
Sometimes it can be a good role.
He's the Margaret Dumont in this relationship.
Isn't it really based more on Abbott and Costello?
I'm the Duke Mitchell to his Sammy Petrillo.
Who's the Abbott? Who's the Costello? That's the term
like
right.
I would like to be the Abbott.
I would like to lose enough weight to be considered the Abbott.
Well, we're going to see.
They both didn't live long, though, right?
Not long enough.
Yeah.
God rest them both.
Yeah.
God rest them both. People at home, at the let's refer to the
awkward dick table.
What's going on?
Oh, we're talking about the people that we're sitting in our view here. We see people dining, and they, you know, do they see us, by the way?
Yes,
can they
see
us? They can see us?
They can't hear us, but they can see us.
So if I take off my shirt and rub it against the glass while they're dining right there, that might interfere with their...
It might stimulate their appetite.
It could stimulate their appetite. This guy doesn't look hungry. I have an idea.
It looks like a...
I think it went okay. I think they slept together last night.
You think so? You think it worked out, huh?
I think it went okay, because believe me, at this table, we have seen everything. We have seen people who went home together and clearly it didn't work out.
Right.
Or clearly it worked for him, but not for her. We've seen internet dates that have crashed.
Do you think this is the
first
time they slept together, or you think that this is that they've done it a few times?
No, it's a few times, because even though they're still into each other, you can still sense this sort of romantic ennui.
Yeah, they do seem to be... She's enjoying herself. She's got a little face hand dance thing going right now.
They're enjoying their pizza. And, yeah. and he's sipping a Bloody Mary right now from a mason jar.
Yeah.
The dating game.
It seems like for now, like, the conversation is flowing. It doesn't seem forced. Although it doesn't seem like he's really saying anything. She does seem to be running the conversation. Up, and she's going for a big swag of the pizza. She goes.
She's clearly smarter than
What's going to happen while she's chewing? Is he going to take the silence at that point? Yeah, he is. He's covering that silence while she chews. They're working it out. They're keeping the conversation going. They're a good team.
They're doing better than we are. For the people listening in Noumea, New Caledonia, and other parts of Oceania, which I know we do have listeners.
Not to mention the lost continent of Atlantis, our largest demographic.
Our biggest. Yeah. And growing still, surprisingly.
Where all my sales come from.
Our cabin-like studio has a huge window overlooking one of the main dining rooms here at Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Look, they just noticed us now.
They know we're talking about them.
They're hip.
They're hip to it.
He's really chewing into that margarita, though.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to mine as well. They make a good margarita here.
A good margarita. They make
margarita pizza, I'm saying.
Oh, I want a margarita.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Come your way.
All right. No, I want a margarita.
We're going to make you sing for your supper, though, Jack.
Yeah.
The sooner the better, I think.
I think it's time for a song.
What do you got for us, Jack? Play some music.
Let's see. Play some music, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I had this sad song all set up, and it doesn't feel sad.
No, this is not a sad show.
It's a mitzvah.
I think I'll have to just go with an old classic.
Do you know all the words to It's a Hard Rain Gonna Fall? Because Patti Smith fucking doesn't. Yeah,
I told you. Nobody knows.
I'm so upset about this.
You know what I think? Having followed Dylan for as long as we all have, Dylan obviously sent her as some sort of like a shill to like mess up the whole thing, right?
Oh, you think he kayfabed it?
Yeah.
He said, here, do me a favor, fuck up the second verse?
Well, I don't think he asked her to. He knew she would.
I think that's
why he had her go there.
Right.
I've worked on these books with the guy who produced the Grammys, with people who've worked with, like I said, the Kennedy Center Honors, and these sorts of things. And fucking up is not allowed. I mean, imagine you're like the Wilson sisters doing Stairway to Heaven. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah,
which is amazing, right? And you're sitting there, and the Clintons are there, and the Obamas are there, not to mention the members of Led Zeppelin. You've got a 75-piece string section.
They did not mess
you got
it
a 200-piece chorus, right? No, you get one shot at it.
You do.
You don't fuck it up. You don't fuck it up. I'll tell you, I went to see Jerry Lee Lewis TV taping of this PBS Masters series this time. I was thrilled. I mean, Jerry Lewis. And I stood next to Ronnie Wood the whole time.
You think he'd know the words?
No, actually, he didn't. It was this whole, like, you know, rogues gallery of celebrities and quasi-celebrities singing along with Jerry Lee. So first is Glenn Frey from the Eagles. May he rest in not so much peace.
He's the one that died, okay.
He's the one.
I like the boots.
Okay, and he wanted... Okay,
the
so
boots
he,
were cool.
So he gets up, he does a song.
Fry boots.
Decides he didn't sing well enough, wants to do it again. Jerry Lee's clearly annoyed, decides he wants to do it again. Jerry Lee asks him to leave. Okay, things are already going bad.
Yeah.
Okay, Ronnie Wood is supposed to do a song. The teleprompter breaks and claims he can't sing Little Queenie or fake a Chuck Berry song. This is Ronnie Wood we're talking about, right? Because the
he's not familiar with that music.
Because the teleprompter, yes. Because the teleprompter breaks, so he can't do the song. The only guy that had it together was Chris Isaak, who got up there. It was just like person after person who was using notes and didn't really have it together and had to figure out the key. The only person that had it together that night was Chris Isaak, who was like literally thrilled to be playing with Jerry Lee Lewis, as anybody in this room would be, knew the song, dead cold, had rehearsed it obviously 1,000 times in front of his mirror in his bedroom with a hairbrush, and got up there, nailed it, looked like a kid at, Christmas morning, and was gleeful. All these other so-called professionals just couldn't fucking be bothered to learn their fucking song. It really just made me give me...
I'll say it again, Mike. If the King of Sweden is going to give me a gold medal and $1 million, I would at least learn the words to the song.
Also, why didn't he just send Jerry Lee Lewis? That would have been more interesting.
Jerry Lee just let him
do it. The true story, Jerry Lee was family inquired about having me killed once. I opened for Jerry Lee in New York City, and we had a great night. And we had the same manager at the time, and he liked me. I used the quote. He quoted me as he said, "He sounds like that Cash kid, but good." and so he really liked me. So he said, "Jerry Lee wants to meet you." So I went backstage, and he's like, "I really like your music, son." And we got talking. At one point, I had my guitar. I said, "So Jerry, I was wondering if you would sign this guitar for me." And he looks at me. He goes, "I don't sign guitars. I sign pianos." And I said, "Well, I had a little trouble getting the piano down the stairs." And we laughed, and it was all funny. So I walked out, and people were like, "So what was it like meeting Jerry Lewis?" I start talking to people, and I tell the story laughing, saying it was amazing, and it was a great honor. So the next day, it's in the New York Post in page 6. The Post overheard me tell this story, and they put this negative slant on it. It said, "Sign of an ego," with Jerry Lee Lewis's picture. And it said, "Local legend Jack Grace was snubbed by Jerry Lee Lewis for asking for his autograph." And so the manager...
It didn't go down that way.
Not at all. It was funny. Oh. It was a funny moment. So the manager calls me and says, "I'm going to have to turn my back on you." And he goes, "Just so you know, the family called and inquired if we could have you killed."
That's like Chico Marx, right? He goes, "I'm going to kill someone for money." He goes, "You're my friend. I'll kill you for nothing."
Well, Dave, Dave, you got no sound effects for this? That's an unbelievable story.
Are you
going to
play a song or what? You're malingering.
All right.
I think this guy's malingering.
Dude, this is the show that specializes
our show of shows.
I think we're going to be outed finally. I don't know how to play guitar.
You've had more malingerers on this show.
It's a malingering.
Got this 47 Gibson here.
That is a beautiful guitar.
And it's there's just one note that suddenly is going sour on me, the B, as always.
Well, Jack, I
heard that Cash kid had the same problems.
He did.
While Jack is tuning his guitar, Mike, don't you tell the people at home about all of this great Heritage Radio?
You know, it is fundraising season. Okay, this is not for nothing, but because I hate a fundraising season on NPR more than fucking anything. But you know what NPR stands for, Pete?
What?
No Pizza Radio.
It is no
okay.
Pizza radio.
Try to get fucking Leonard Lopate to give you a piece of fucking pizza.
Lenny's not giving anyone pizza.
You think Terry Gross ever sent out for a fucking Beast Mats?
I don't think so.
They can't even digest it anymore.
All right, Jack, but it is fundraising season. We have new shirts. We have new tank tops. We've got new tote
bags.
Well,
I'm going to tell you about these shirts. The HRNTs are $20 unisex size. Is X small to extra large. HRN tanks at $20, unisex sizes, extra small, 2 extra large. That covers just about everyone, don't you think, Mike?
This show is going so well until you read that.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to just try one.
Designed by Anthony Falco.
So the album that that's coming out is going to come out March 24th.
A new record. You're very prolific.
It's called "Everything I Say Is a Lie."
Oh, I read the advance.
I haven't put it out yet because it's so hard to put albums out because there's how do you put them out?
I was going
to
ask you about that.
What do you release them on?
You clearly spent so much time on it. It's really a lovely record. It's
recorded in Greenpoint.
It's recorded very well. And now what do you do?
So I'm going to release it March 24th and do my best.
All right. Well, we're behind you.
Give us a taste.
You're invited back. Come back March 24th.
Thank you.
And do
I
it
will.
Again.
That'd be great.
All right. Give everybody a.
But for taste. Just to be, of course, I'm going to play a song off a different album.
Oh, that makes sense.
Is it going to be "A Hard Rain's Going to Fall"?
Well, it's not.
Good.
Patty
Smith
go.
Ruined it for me.
This song, it's a song I hadn't been playing for years, and I've been playing it again because it just seems to fit. My wife and I split up, and then, like, I was fine. I was sort of okay with it. But then a couple weeks ago, after I went to my van, that's when she told me that she was seeing somebody else, right? So, and that she loves this man. So, so that just somehow amped up the drinking naturally for a little bit. And, you know, now I'm, like, coming on the other end, getting used to it again, and I'll be fine.
You've come to the right place.
So, yeah. So this song sort of came back into the realm. It's off my album called Drinking Songs for Lovers. And this is called I Drank Too Much Again. Well, the trouble came in the early morn. Didn't have much to be thankful for. So I tried my best to leave the bed. Take a pack of wild horses just to hold my head. And it flowed to me like water. A sympathy I could barter. Oh, I drank too much again. Well, the simple times I remember well. When I really think it through, you know it's hard to tell. Why not remember the best of times? And all that petty bull, just leave it all behind. And it made the day get better, like the comfort from your love letter. Oh, I drank too much again. Oh, I drank too much again. I didn't mean to do it. Tried my best to get through it. Oh, I drank too much again. Well, I promised myself that I'd try to behave. But then the night was hell and the daytime came. Another chance, another promise came. You know I'd try it all again if I could find my way. But you know, my love, I'm a fighter. Things are bound to get brighter. Oh, I drank too much again. Oh, I drank too much again. Didn't mean to do it. Tried my best to get through it. Oh, I drank too much again. When the comfort's found, I hope it's here to stay. And all that pain you suffered will just melt away. Nightmares turn to fairy tales. May that story unwind for a good long spell. You might as well enjoy it. Don't find the need to destroy it. Oh, I drank too much again. Oh, I drank too much again. Didn't mean to do it. Tried my best to get through. Oh, I drank too much again. Oh, I drank too much again.
All right, and
oh yeah,
Jack.
I want to say. Yeah. You have somehow managed to combine the best elements of Merle Haggard with other really good elements of Merle Haggard.
That's right.
That's
good. Yeah, now, what we have noticed here, the people at home can't see it, but various other artists have signed your guitar.
This guitar.
Who do you have there?
Okay. I got Doc Watson signed the guitar. I opened for him at the Bottom Line. Now, the way to get it at the time, an official Doc Watson, is that you have to have... He was blind, so he couldn't sign. So, well, you had to have an official family member help guide his hand.
All right.
So his nephew helped sign that.
And who else do you have?
And right here I have Merle Haggard.
All right. See, Merle's there.
Merle signed the guitar. He grabbed this guitar. I did a few shows with him in California when he was put out that If I Could Only Fly album where he covered the Blaze Foley song. And Red Volkert was playing with the time.
Red Volkert. Yeah. A guy who, boy, you talk about a guy who doesn't get enough. He's sort of an underground guy. We used to go watch him in Austin. He was, right? And no, it was like watching like Billy Gibbons and Jeff Beck and every other known world famous flash young guitar hero, except complete humility playing in a country band in a roadhouse.
Well, when he came to New York, I took him to Sevilla, which is an old school place here. We had the sangria. He really liked the shrimp and green sauce. He likes the food here in New York. Red likes to eat. So this moment, I'm coming down with Merle Haggard. I meet him, and he looks at me and goes, "How'd you do?" I said, "Well, Merle, I think I warmed up the audience, okay." And I said, "So, Merle, I was wondering if you'd sign this guitar." And it's a beat-up 1947 Gibson.
Yeah, it looks like it went through the laundry with Willie Nelson's guitar.
Exactly. So Merle grabs the guitar and he goes, "You don't want an old man like me signing a guitar like this?" I said, "Actually, that's exactly what I'd like you to do, Merle." So he signs the guitar. It says Merle Haggard, 2002. And as I go to take it from him, he pulls it back from me. He goes, "Hang on a second." And he sways it in his hands. He goes, "I think I feel a few more songs in this one." He smiles and hands it back to me. Gave me my moment. And then I asked him to play If I Could Only Fly. I was so nervous after meeting Merle. I hadn't smoked cigarettes for like 6 years. I went up to this little box on the side and just started to smoke Marlboro Reds. So the song I asked him to play, song two, he looks up at me and winks at me and lays into the song.
All right.
It was a fun night. It was a romantic night.
I see a few others. Is that like, from here I can't tell. Is that Don Kirshner and Lucille Ball?
I think it's Ron Wood and Tom Jones.
Yeah, it's Vivian Lee and and Florence Henderson. Actually, down here is Charlie Louvin.
All right.
Charlie Louvin and the Louvin Brothers. Sure. I used to book the Roadie Bar, as you remember.
I saw Charlie Louvin there.
I brought him there. I put together a band for him. We would talk on the phone. He just didn't think anyone cared in New York.
And it was packed out. It was crazy.
And that did literally launch the career that led him to winning a Grammy before he died. And I will take a small bit of credit because I pulled him out of the bedroom for
Jack,
that.
Jack, let me tell you, you deserve a lot of credit. And booking the Rodeo Bar, which I was just happy to be walking by today, still has signs up that says retail space available.
Well, no, it's about to be a sports bar. I've been talking to the people. They're totally lame.
I happened to unfortunately be there during yesterday being like run over by a bunch of assholes in Santa Claus costumes. Mm-hmm. The best of these like 22-year-old young women wearing like skin tight pajamas. So I gotta say, looked terrific. But I'm like, honey, you're gonna die of hypothermia.
that's not our problem though. That was the only part of Santa Con that was good. There was definitely some
enjoy it while it lasts.
Young chickadees looking pretty sexy.
But the Rodeo Bar really was the great longest running honky tonk.
Yep.
I mean,
in New York,
after the Lone Star met its demise and its second, I guess, the Lone Star Uptown,
Two Lone Stars.
But really, Fifth Avenue and 13th Street, I saw more good music there than any other place in my entire life. I mean, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis there many times in the early 80s, which was tremendous. I mean, he was so good playing all country music.
Yeah.
I saw James Brown there. I saw Dr. John there. Dr. John lived in the neighborhood. He played there once every 3 weeks. And I used to get stoned.
What about the Fleshtones? Did they play there?
Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. Two sets a night.
Those are the nights I didn't go.
Oh, yeah. Those are Steve Cropper, he's like there all night. In fact, we did a whole weekend or something. He was there each night. And he goes, "Man, I want to get up and play a few songs with you guys." And it's like the band didn't know how to play any of his songs.
Right.
So so Steve could.
Lovable flesh tone moments.
I'm going string tomorrow. Green Onions. Goes like this. The Ronchans actually were a band from there because I wasn't the drummer at the time, but the current beat master put a beer through a wall upstairs. I forget who they're opening up for. But man, the weird thing about the Lone Star, too, aside from obviously every country artist, every Chicago blues guy, everybody that was on that circuit that actually truly existed. I saw Albert King there. I remember one night I was bringing Buddy Guy drinks all night long. There was no one there. Second set. after midnight. There may have been like 15 people watching Buddy Guy there, and he was drinking White Cadillacs, which is milk with scotch in it. And I just happened to be the guy that had that seat where
I'm just going
to
be thinking about that for the next 15
where I could
minutes.
Reach the bar and reach the stage. I was like 18 years old. I was in awe. You know, I was like, he's like, ah, da, 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 da. And so yeah, it was White Cadillacs all night long. Saw John Lee Hooker there. I said, I smoked dope with Dr. John on top of the iguana that used to be on top of the building. Remember?
Yes,
and the big sign that said, too much ain't enough, and there was that giant iguana up there. The Lone Star was the best. But the Rodeo Bar, which you booked for a long time, man, you know, it was like, it was reliable, man. That was like money in the bank. You go there.
I never had a White Cadillac there. Have you ever had a White Cadillac? See, I told you I'm going to be thinking about this White Cadillacs for a while.
Scotch and milk. I'll tell you what,
you need to digest that one.
You know why? Because the ulcer starts. Yeah. That's why I drinks it that way.
Right, so it's like the Pepto-Bismol booze. but the scotch and milk, like...
It's delicious.
Is it?
Oh, God, yes. It's a nice...
All right.
It's kind of like a browner version of a White Russian, you know? There's a White Russian.
It's tasty.
You have had a White Cadillac?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
Before bed. You know, that's like a before bed drink.
Could you put cereal in a White Cadillac?
I've had for breakfast. That's what I put on my cornflakes. As ever, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet.
That's it.
But I'm not letting you get out of here, though, Jack, without another song. And kind of like that, I wanted to ask you about Van Hayride. You know,
the problem with Van Hayride, the Countryfied Van Halen band, is that it's actually like too many of the youth don't know who Van Halen is.
I gotta say, I went to see Van Halen.
Anyway, that's a good thing.
I love the concept. I enjoyed it when you played, but I swear I hate Van Halen more than any other band on the planet. I can't even stand the sound of them. I don't like any of your songs. And
please, Mike.
And
I was so
enthusiastic, and I'm such a fan of Jack's that I
negativity.
I could do this, you know. I could do this. And all right, Van Halen. Anyway, where can we catch you next, Jack?
Where can you catch me next? I'll be in Newport on the 28th of December at Norrie's, and I'll be playing somewhere in New York City. I'm sure where. So jackgrace.com. I'm going to check the same place to find out where I'm playing.
Good. And in around 10 minutes, you're going to be in the tent here at Roberta's.
Yeah, that's
at the
right.
Bar.
Right
here. And the Chapiteau.
All right. Thanks to everybody out in Radio Land. Pete's around with Dave in the booth. And Jack Grace is the real deal. Come back when you're in the spring when your CD comes out for real. I'm really glad we have a lot. You know, you made it. We have a lot more to talk about. Take us out.
Okay. I am the best lover that will ever be. I'll pass the test. No one will surpass me. It won't be easy to find somebody better, such a savage shredder. I can't keep up with all the loving that the babies need in the neighborhood. Yeah, yeah. First I wanna tell you I love you. Now I wanna say everything I say is a lie. Everything I say is a lie. I am too humble. Everybody tells me you take a tumble, dear me. I'll pick you up and set you free. It won't be easy to find somebody number, find somebody dumber. I can't keep up with all the love that the ladies need in the neighborhood. Yeah, yeah. First I want to tell you I love you. Now I want to say, really want to say. Everything I say is a lie. Everything I say is a lie. Everything I say is a lie.
It's Arts and Seizures! listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.